Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of The Fast Break. And it's been a while since we talked. Like we said, I think it was like late November, early October. We got Mr. Jordan Malley back from the show. What's up, dog?
What's up? How you doing? I've been good, and I've been so happy to get back into podcast with you. It's been a lot of really good music dropping, a lot of good sports to talk about, and yeah, we've got a lot to dive into in like the next, I don't even know, we could spend a whole hour on one album that's come out, and but I've been good. How you been?
I've been awesome, man. Like I've been telling you before, you know, we got on the show, if you're not following this man on Twitter, you are missing out. Like, this guy puts out the most funniest and truthful content. Where can we follow you on Twitter? I just want to get out the way right now.
You can follow me at Jordan C. Malley, JordanCMalley. I appreciate that. You know, I was telling you off mic that some of the stuff that I go on there, I don't get a lot of hits, and then like it could be the stupidest joke I make on there, and the one that I might not even think that's that funny, and it hits, and it's a huge success. But the ones that I'm like dying hysterically at, it'll get like, I don't know, like one person will like it, but like I was telling you before, you got to shoot your shot, and that's what Twitter's all about. That's exactly what you said. So I try with the media.
Can we talk about the Kings? Like, how dysfunctional was the trade like before, and how dysfunctional is the trade now due to the fact that New Orleans is a small sample size, but they're 0-3.
Man, I can't even believe that they got what they got for DeMarcus Cousins, and that's kind of like the same narrative that's been going on across all NBA podcasts, TV shows, whatever you have it. But the fact that they liked Buddy Hield that much to the point where they thought he was going to be the next Steph Curry, I think is a long shot. Believe me, I'm a big Buddy Hield fan. I loved him in college. I thought his story is really fantastic too, and I want nothing but the best for him. But Steph Curry is a long shot for that guy, and I feel bad for him because now he's stuck on a Kings team that is, you know, it's virtually in worse shape than the Bulls are, and that's hard to do. But I don't know. Ultimately, I think it's a complete steal for New Orleans. And if Anthony Davis re-signs long-term, I can see Boogie Cousins doing the same thing. Now, the question is money-wise, are they going to have enough money to chalk up two big free agents? That's another story. But overall, I would give it a complete A for the Pelicans. And although they're 0-3, I don't know if they played tonight or if they played recently, but as far back as I can remember, they're 0-3. I haven't gotten to watch, actually, them play together, but I've been telling people they'll figure it out.
Yeah, I think it was like Anthony Davis had like 23 in the first quarter, then Boogie had like 20 the second quarter. You don't lose anything by trading for Boogie Cousins. It's like New Orleans had nothing to play for to begin with. It's not like the roster was the greatest. You still got Jrue Holiday as well. Those wings are awful. That bench is awful. I mean, like, I think they're averaging like 27 apiece, both of them, and, you know, they lost. So you can't blame it on the bigs. They just got to work on the wing play. And Solomon Hill, as they're starting a three spot, that's not going to help you any day of the week.
Man, they gave that guy all that money, too. They gave Solomon Hill so much money, and he's so bad. And the Pacers were lucky. They said, yeah, see you later. Take the money, and yeah, you can have the money. But I don't know. For the games that he played with the Pacers, when I watched him last year, when I was at every game, he turned it on in March in the last 10, 15 games when they needed him to, and that ultimately sold him a contract. And he's been brutal to watch from the games that I've watched him play in. He's been brutal.
I don't know what the worst contract was last year. There were so many bad contracts in the offseason, from Mozgov to Dang to Andrew Nicholson, who got shipped. I mean, it's just all
Joakim Noah's.
Oh, Joakim Noah, yeah.
His contract, yeah, you're so right. You hit on all of those guys. I think the Biombo contract was insane, too. I get that these guys are starting to get paid way more money than they should, and it's going to be completely different than anything that we're used to in the past with the CBA rule, the new CBA rules going into effect, and that teams are going to have a lot more money to spend. But, like, Bismack Biyombo getting the money that he did get, and like the way the Orlando Magic are set up now after like getting rid of Serge Ibaka and then trading Victor Oladipo, and now they pretty much got nothing to stand for it after sending him to Toronto. So I don't know. There was a lot of bad contracts, and all of those are, I couldn't even pick one that was the worst.
Yeah, like you can just summarize that there was more bad contracts than good. Let's talk about the trade deadline. You know, for the cat, you know, for the average NBA fan, they'd be like, oh my gosh, it was so boring. But like, as I reflect on it, it was a lot of like key pivotal trades, you know, due to salary cap in the offseason, or, you know, role players such as PJ Tucker going to Toronto, who just clicked with Toronto immediately, which I thought was crazy. A lot of key role players being traded, especially, let's talk about the Taj Gibson trade and Dougie trade. You being a Bulls fan and you covering the Bulls, what is your take on all that?
Let me read you something that I read on my podcast on Saturday that I think after I read this, it'll pretty much be end of conversation and you'll understand where I sit with this. But the podcast that I'm talking about is the Debatables podcast on almightyballer.com, part of the A-Team podcast. You can find us on iTunes. But this is what I read to Bulls fans, and this has been an article that's been circulated around Chicago everywhere in the last 72 hours since the trade deadline. So this piece is written by Alex Novick, and he says the Bulls pulled off a curious trade before Thursday's deadline. They sent Taj Gibson, Doug McDermott, and a 2018 second round pick to the Thunder in exchange for three reserves: Cameron Payne, Anthony Morrow, Joffrey Laverne. So he goes on, gives him a little bit more detail, and then this is the part that really was striking to me, and I'm glad he dug this up. He says. The centerpiece for the Bulls appears to be 22-year-old Cameron Payne. The second-year Murray State product was exhibiting much value, much more value than Westbrook's dance partner, but Payne's 6.1 player efficiency rating is tied for the second worst in the NBA among players averaging at least 15 minutes per game. So that's the guy the Bulls were the highest on in this trade, the reason why they made this trade in the first place. He's got the second worst player efficiency rating in the NBA. You want to know who the worst is? Paul Zipser. So the Bulls have the two worst players in the NBA in player efficiency with averaging 15 minutes or more. It gets worse. I promise you, it gets worse. So let's talk about Anthony Morrow. Sporting News says Anthony Morrow is the only qualified player in the NBA to average fewer than one rebound and one assist per game this season. So he changed his shot. A lot of people talked about how he changed his shot, tried to get a quicker release, and it ultimately ended up with terrible accuracy. He can't make a shot now, and to add up all to that, he can't even rebound or assist the ball while he's on the floor. And to top it all off in this trade, they top the piece off by talking about Joffrey Laverne. Joffrey Laverne is a 6'11 Frenchman. He came over, I believe, 2 years ago, and they say Joffrey Laverne is on pace to be the only qualifying center since Mehmet Akur in 2007 to 2008 to post a rebound rate worse than 15% and a block rate worse than 1%. He's only got six blocks all year. He's played in 44 games, and he only has six blocks all season. So you tell me, what does that sound like? You just traded a guy that was a good three-point shooter and the best scorer in NCAA basketball in recent modern history, and plus a chip that you've kept for 9 years that you drafted late in Taj Gibson, plus a pick. So you tell me, how does that come off as a non-Bulls fan without me starting to scream into the mic? How does that come off to you as a regular NBA fan, not so closely tied to the Bulls?
It sounds like, A, they don't know what they're doing. B, it sounds like they want to lose. The Bulls have shown, the front office has shown, like, even back when Jordan was there, that they didn't get along. So it shows that, like, they are clueless. They're power heavy. They're strong minded, and you being in the Chicago area, how do the people feel about Jerry Reinsdorf from the inside, you know, point of view?
I think Jerry Reinsdorf as a whole, obviously he was inducted to the Basketball Hall of Fame, large in part because of what he did with Michael Jordan and the era that set in the '90s, but people kind of, I feel like, have worn out their welcome with Jerry Reinsdorf, and that especially goes if you're a White Sox fan too, who he owns both teams, and his son has actually taken over the operations for the Bulls pretty much full time now. Jerry kind of just oversees it. The Chicago Sun-Times reported that not too long ago, and actually made an interesting point about him. And Michael Reinsdorf is a financially savvy, I guess, guy that considers the business first over actually winning. And so that pretty much tells you the tale of what the Bulls are going to be for the foreseeable future, unless the team gets sold. But I don't see the fourth most valuable franchise in basketball getting sold anytime soon. So to me, things look bad. I think it's more on Gar Foreman and John Paxson, which Bulls fans we can't figure out why these guys still have jobs. And John Paxson, for one, he's got a job because he's got the long-standing Bulls connection. And Gar Foreman, I don't know, him and Fred Hoiberg have this Iowa State connection. And if Fred Hoiberg or if Gar Foreman leaves and they end up parting ways with him whenever this may be, it's certainly not going to be next year, but maybe 2 years if the Bulls are just as bad next year. Maybe he'll part ways and that'll kind of ship Fred Hoiberg out of there because that's Gar Foreman's guy. So it's a cluster. It's not a good team to watch, even though they just went on a 4-game winning streak. It's not a whole lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think it dates back to the offseason where, you know, I was okay with the Michael Carter-Williams trade for Tony Snell. I mean, whatever. It is what it is. But then you go and sign Rondo, which, you know, you didn't need Rondo whatsoever. The Dwayne Wade signing I can live with, but if this is going to be the dynasty of Jimmy Butler, why wouldn't you build players that would help Jimmy Butler out instead of getting a ball-dominant guard like Rondo? Wade likes to handle the ball as well, so Jimmy has found his touches this regular season, but you still feel like he's missing a little extra And, like, the whole Jimmy Butler situation, why was he on the block to begin with? I know there was circulation about Jimmy doesn't like the front office that well, and then you have the whole thing with Jimmy not being known as a leader in the locker room. Where do you stand with Jimmy Butler, and where do you think he's going to be going in the offseason, perhaps?
Yeah, I was one of these people that thought that it was a good idea for the Bulls to part ways with Jimmy Butler, partly because for the career of Jimmy Butler, I think where he sits in his career right now, he's peaking as one of the best players, top 10, 15, 20, wherever you want to put him in the NBA. He's a top player in the NBA, and right now the Bulls are wasting his career in essentially letting him hang around with not even making the playoffs the last 2 years, and now going to hang around the six to eight seed in the Eastern Conference, depending on where they land, with the Eastern Conference being so bad. Bringing Wade in was a good idea. It was a good sell. It was an overpriced sell. The thing that I think frustrates me the most about this whole entire thing is the lack of consistency when the front office talks to the fans and talks to the media and talks to the players or talks about the players. I said this on a podcast that's going to come out later this week. I talked with Joe Borelli, a 76ers guy, does the Superfly podcast on Almighty Baller. I told him that the way the Bulls have gone about things, they told us in the summer that Dwayne Wade was a part of this push to get him all summer long, and that was their number one target. And then they came out after they made this Cameron Payne deal with Thunder that they said that they had no idea that Dwayne Wade was going to sign with the Bulls. So it was a complete contradiction on John Paxson's part. And there's audio you can pull up from him directly quoting and saying all of these things. And it's to the point now where Bulls fans just don't even know what to do. And I feel bad. The worst part of it all is I feel bad for Jimmy Butler because the guy is a phenomenal player and it's fun to watch him, but the fact that you've got to support a team that doesn't really care about winning or the future of the franchise, rather than they just care about earning their dollar and maybe their extra money, their extra revenue from the two playoff games that the Bulls will host at home when they get knocked out after the first round. But to me, it's Jimmy Butler's wasting his career. And the fact that Boston was going to maybe possibly give up two draft picks is a huge thing, and that's still up in speculation. Nobody really knows whether or not those picks were protected. And if they were protected, I don't blame the front office for saying, no, we're not giving up a top player, an elite player in the league for picks that are protected in the top three when we're not sure what we can get after three.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. Like I said, I can see, depending where that Brooklyn pick lands, if Boston is willing to trade for Jimmy Butler in the offseason. I mean, Jimmy, his stats are there, but overall, you can just see he doesn't feel or seem that happy in Chicago as a stand. And I don't know if it's true or not, but dating back when Tibbs was there, apparently front office wanted Tony Snell to be the guy because they didn't want to pay Jimmy, you know, coming up in the future. Was that true?
Yeah, I remember that story coming out, and they leveraged Jimmy Butler by telling him, basically, if you don't do to our demands of playing time and you don't agree to our contract well, when you go into free agency, then we're just going to sit you for the rest of the season or play you limited minutes so you look bad, so your stats go down. We're going to give the role to Tony Snell instead. I did hear that. I'm not sure if that's all that how much of that's actually true, but I've heard that from multiple people, read that in multiple places. So that's spot on. If that's something, that's something that's disturbing. And if that's the way players are getting treated, I don't blame people for not wanting to come to Chicago and play for the Bulls. Jimmy Butler just happened to get drafted here, and he happened to develop here and develop under one of the best coaches in the NBA that the Bulls decided to can because they couldn't get along with him. The coach that was first quickest to 100 wins in an NBA career by any coach. So you let that guy go to bring in Fred Hoiberg. And the fact of the matter is Fred Hoiberg's not even allowed to run his system that he wants to run. And it just all comes down to what the Bulls want to do versus what the Bulls should actually do. And what they want to do is build on the fly. Hopefully they can land one or two guys that hit, that people gave up on, young guys such as Cameron Payne with some of these nagging injuries. And hopefully they hit on one or two of these guys and maybe land a couple second tier free agents, maybe in 2018, 2019 to eventually sit in the top four in the Eastern Conference. That doesn't mean that they're going to win anything. With LeBron James still in the Eastern Conference and the Golden State Warriors the way they are, the Bulls aren't winning anything. So it's interesting. I think the Bulls are wasting Jimmy Butler. And I've said it for a long time. I still think Jimmy Butler is going to walk in 2 years if they keep him here. I don't think he's going to stay for the money anymore. And I think he'll walk and maybe go to L.A. or something because he loves L.A. He loves it out there. He has a summer house, or I guess I call it a summer house, an off-season house in L.A. But the interesting sticky part with that is Paul George has talked about how much he's wanted to go to L.A. So money-wise, cap-wise, space-wise, playing-wise, I don't know how well that would work out. But that's all down the pipeline, all down the tunnel.
Yeah, I mean, further down, you know, the road for Lakers fan, I know we got the Laker Legacy podcast. They probably touched on this. But with that being said, you can probably, you know, Mozgov deal expiring back then and up there in the future, as well as Luol Deng contract. Maybe you can trade the both of those assets and maybe get Butler and Paul George on the same team. That would be interesting mix to see. But like you said, it's further down the line. Breaking news coming in. Kevin Durant hyperextended his knee tonight versus the Washington Wizards. Washington ended up winning the game. They said it won't be that serious, but nonetheless, Kevin Durant, I mean, let's not, you know, Kevin Durant has been, you know, injured in the past before. So obviously he hasn't been injured as much, but still, if you're a Warriors fan, that's a little bit sign of concern.
Yeah, and to lose that guy for any amount of time, and then now, I think the worst part of it all is now that you have to worry about every time he goes on the floor and every time something little happens to him, especially coming down the stretch here, you have to worry about, oh, is he at 100%? You know, you don't want to retweak that knee, especially coming into playoff season where there's 25 games left. If I was Golden State, I would tell Kevin Durant, take as much time as you need. We don't need you to the playoffs now. It's pretty much coast time for Golden State, and we don't need you to the playoffs, so I don't know. If I was Golden State, I'd let him take as much time as he needs. Ultimately, he'll be back out on there. And really, this team won a championship without Kevin Durant, and he only helps them further to that. So I don't think their game plan really changes all that much or their potential to win or not. But to me, I don't know. What would you do? I would tell Kevin Durant, you know, if you need to take 2 weeks off just to rest and make sure you're 100%, go ahead and do that.
Well, that was a problem with Kevin Durant coming in. I mean, ultimately he's going to go down as a Hall of Famer, but you do know, like, he came in with, well, he's tall, he's frail, he's skinny. So, I mean, cases like this, it's going to happen, but I totally agree with you there. Golden State is more than capable of playing without Kevin Durant. Take your time. We already clinched the playoff berth. Nobody's really going to catch up. Maybe San Antonio, but I don't see that happening. So take your time, get healthy, and Golden State will figure it out. I mean, I would love to see Houston outshoot Golden State and maybe make it to the NBA Finals. That would be hilarious and entertaining to watch. But I don't see that happening.
There's a good case for it too. I mean, like the hopefuls, especially the Rockets hopefuls, and shout out to the A-Team Rockets podcast. Shout out to Eric Gordon too. That dude, they've got 2 6-man-of-the-years on their team right now, and Lou Will came in and ended up scoring the most on the team the other night. Did I think he had like 29 or 33 or something that?
I think it was 27 points he had first game debut.
27 points is pretty good, and for a Lou Will that kind of like, I guess, disappeared after he went to the Lakers and signed for all that money. Now he's on a team that loves shooting threes, and that's his specialty, and maybe can revive some of that six-man-of-the-year that he saw with Toronto. And speaking of Toronto, they're in some trouble. Is it true that Kyle Lowry is gonna be out for the season now? Is that a likely possibility, or do you think he's gonna return for the playoffs?
They're saying that he'll return for the playoffs. Now, when? I don't know. They're hoping for the start, because when I read the news, they said 5 to 6 weeks. So that's about when the playoffs will start. But even when it's 5 to 6 weeks, you know, you have to heal. You still got to get practice time back, get in game shape. So I think best case scenario, first round. But if they're able to push it through the first round without Kyle Lowry, which I think they're more than capable of doing, because the lower half of the Eastern Conference is just, you know, it is what it is. If they can make it to the second round, maybe Kyle can be fully rested. But I have full confidence in DeMar DeRozan dropping 40 the other night in a game winner against the New York Knicks.
I can't believe where the Wizards are sitting right now. And we were going to talk about like our most exciting teams, maybe to fill out the eighth role in both conferences. But let's shout out to the Wizards for the type of game that they've put together in the last couple months. John Wall, especially this team. I remember watching this team last year, especially in person. Besides Bradley Beal and John Wall, they didn't really have all that much. And Bradley Beal wasn't playing to the quality that he's playing this year. But it's surprising. I don't know if you're that surprised. And they were probably one of the most surprising teams out of any of these teams. Is the Wizards sitting at number 3 in the Eastern Conference. Which team do you like, though, like in the 8th seed to finish out in the Eastern Conference, in the Western Conference? What teams do you like?
Well, as far as your Washington Wizards comment, I've been on the board saying I would choose John Wall over Kyrie Irving any day of the week.
I'm with you on that.
Due to the fact that, you know, I get that Kyrie was young, but Kyrie was not winning games. He was a ball-centric point guard before LeBron got there. John Wall took a roster of a 36-year-old Paul Pierce, you know what I'm saying, Otto Porter Jr., not the greatest surrounding talent like Nene, to the second round multiple times. And they took that Indiana team to 6, that was number 1 seed that year, and could have pushed them, you know, to the Eastern Conference Finals with the Washington Wizards. So, with that being said, I never got the hate on Colin Cowherd dissing on John Wall. I think it was pathetic. But 12 points, 19 assists for John Wall. I love him. But as far as the 8th seed in both conferences, look, let me stick to the East. Detroit, I don't trust Detroit whatsoever. But I don't see Milwaukee catching up due to the fact that Jabari Parker is going to be out the rest of the year, and I love Giannis, I really do. But I still think he's kind of young to carry that Milwaukee team to an 8th seed. And me being a Miami Heat fan, I want to keep losing games. I want a lottery pick in this deep draft class. So I hope we keep losing. I believe we lost to Dallas last night. So my gut is telling me that Milwaukee is going to sneak in there. But I'm going to stick with fact, and I've got Detroit. I think they're 2 games ahead right now. I just don't see Stan Van Gundy letting that team collapse. As far as the West, shout out to Tim DeLeo, because he's a huge, huge Nuggets fan. I had Portland creeping up on there. I don't know about you, but is this McCollum Lillard thing working out?
I don't know. And somebody else across my timeline on Twitter and over the last couple weeks, especially up to the trade down, they were saying that like Trailblazers fans were calling for like a Damian Lillard trade. Like, are they serious? Like, where is that team without Damian Lillard? And maybe it's not working out, but I think they need to supplement that team with more than just those two shooters. They signed Allen Crabb for a ridiculous amount of money too, which was probably not the best idea. But I don't know. I'm surprised that they're sitting all the way at the 10th spot right now out of the playoffs. And a team in that Western Conference that I so hope makes the playoffs, and I'm going to push for them hard because I really want the Bulls to get their pick, is the Kings. So I'm crossing my fingers that that team can somehow find a way into that 8th seed or at least stay relevant enough to stay out of the top 10 picks. But like you said, the Nuggets have looked good, and they played the Bulls just tonight, and they dominated the Bulls, and Jimmy Butler had a really bad game, but the Nuggets are on their way up, and so I don't know, it'll be interesting to see. And hey, I don't count out Dallas either. Dallas and Minnesota, they're only 3 games out of that spot, so it could come down to a lot of close matchups in the last 2 weeks of play. But the Mavericks, a lot of young guys on that team, and you know they don't really have much to lose. So going out there, and if they can drop some points on some people, and Harrison Barnes can play well, Yogi Ferrell can continue to play well, and Nerlens Noel can come in and make an impact. I mean, I told Joe Borelli that's a team that I would like to watch in the next couple of years and see what kind of pieces they assemble around. So. I guess if I'm looking at it, in my Western Conference pick, if I had to look at it, I'm gonna take a flyer. I'm gonna take the Mavericks at number 8. I hope they figure it out. And then as far as the Eastern Conference, like you talked about with the Bucks too, I think you hit it dead on with losing Jabari Parker. That's probably a huge piece to their team. But as bad as this Eastern Conference is, it's really hard to tell. With Detroit, I haven't watched the Pistons play all that much this season, but from the things that I've been hearing, they're kind of a skittish team. And if you look at between the five and 10 seed, they're only separated by 5 games. So there's a lot of crunch time right there in the Eastern Conference. So the saddest thing of it all is the Bulls could get as high as a 5th seed. I mean, they're only 3 games behind Atlanta for the 5th seed in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. To stick with the Nuggets, Nikola Jokic posts his third triple double of the season. You know, much greater things for him to come. I'm going to stick with the Denver Nuggets. I know I was on a record for saying that Portland is going to make that push and get the AFC due to their experience, and they were there last year. You know, they beat the Clippers and, you know, kind of pushed Golden State a little bit around. But, you know, this Damian Lillard trade talk is just ridiculous. It just shows you how much you are a prisoner of the moment. Don't blame Damian Lillard for Portland bringing back the same players and then adding unneeded and unwanted Evan Turner. So let's you know what, I got the Nuggets and I got the Pistons. Something just came up and just blew my mind. How you talking about Yogi Ferrell and the Dallas Mavericks? You know what? Most of their main players now are a bunch of undrafted guys. I mean, have you noticed that? I mean, Seth Curry, I should say, undrafted. Yogi Ferrell, undrafted. Wesley Matthews, undrafted. So, I mean, it just speaks volumes of Rick Carlisle and how good he is as a coach.
Speaks volumes to their college coach, too, Tom Crean, who coached both of those guys as well, Wesley Matthews and Yogi Ferrell. Yogi Ferrell talked a lot about Tom Crean and praised Tom Crean a lot for the type of work ethic. And, man, that guy's been under fire all season at Indiana, and that's a totally different topic for, like, a way, way longer podcast than we even have time for. But, that's one big highlight to attest to Wesley Matthews and Yogi Ferrell's work ethic, is they attest a lot to Tom Crean and what he did for them in college. So it's good for Yogi Ferrell, man. I think without a doubt, I think he should have got drafted. I still think Troy Williams should have got drafted too from Indiana, and he's in the D League right now with Memphis, the Iowa Energy, and he just won the slam dunk contest actually. And interesting enough, the Dallas Mavericks Mark Cuban talked about how he wanted more IU guys on his team, guys that are grinders and more IU guys. And so shout out to Mark Cuban. Check on Troy Williams, your boy Troy Williams from Indiana, because he's playing the D League right now and he just won the dunk contest. So a lot of athleticism if he can learn to not turn the ball over. So yeah, I think it's crazy. The Mavericks are putting together a team that's quite interesting, I guess, for the NBA standards. And they kind of flipped their whole organization around in a matter of what seems to be a couple of months, which is pretty cool to see in the NBA.
Yeah, and I mean, good for Yogi for sticking with it. I mean, you figured, because he was signed with a 10-day contract with the Brooklyn Nets at first, and it didn't work out, which is great because you leave that toxic Brooklyn atmosphere. So it's glad to see him go to a, you know, a great owner in Mark Cuban and a steady organization for the Dallas Mavericks. For Tom Crean, I know a different topic for a different day. Just want to touch on this lightly. I think the criticism is fair, but he's also proven that he's a good coach as well. I mean, they just won the regular season title in the Big Ten the previous year, and the Big Ten is hard to win games in. So where do you stand on the Tom Crean criticism?
Yeah, for a long time here, all the way up until probably the last couple weeks, I was totally against anybody saying that Indiana should fire Tom Crean. And that was just going back to, like I said, within a year's time, he was winning a Big Ten championship at this time last year. He produced Yogi Ferrell for a 4-year player that got a degree, and is the all-time assist leader at Indiana. And you look at some of the other guys that he's pushed through the NBA, whether it's Cody Zeller or Noah Vonleh or Victor Oladipo or even Troy Williams when he got his opportunity in Memphis earlier this year. All these different guys that have come here and been successful. The bad part of it is when you start losing games and you aren't recruiting as well as you should be for a blue blood top 5 historical basketball school, people start to rain down on you. And I guess, as a perspective of somebody who didn't grow up in Indiana and who didn't grow up a Hoosiers fan, and just going to the school and being a fan within the last 5 years and kind of covering the team, it's a completely different aspect of looking at basketball and the way the people treat Indiana basketball in Bloomington, Indiana, in Indianapolis, in that surrounding area. It's crazy. College basketball there is like nothing other. It's one of the very few schools people care more about the college team and what they're doing and at all times rather than a pro team. And only few colleges can say that. But to kind of circle back to what I was talking about with Tom Crean, ultimately, I think his time is running up. I'm still skeptical here. I don't know what, as far as the athletic directors and Indiana's thinking on their side, because I know that they really like Tom Crean a lot and they like what he's devoted to the school. And it really isn't all that bad. If you were anywhere else other than Indiana, this wouldn't even be a question. Tom Crean would still be here. But that, because it's Indiana and there's a certain standard that's held to coaches that come here, he's fallen to a lot of scrutiny, and just some of the weird things he's done and his mismanagement of games, late in games. And you know what? The injuries didn't help either. OG Anunoby going down with an injury that was bad. And James Blackman Jr. last year, even though they won the Big Ten, like losing him too was big. But Indiana's fan base has a very short memory as far as Tom Crean goes. And I think by July 1st, you'll see a buyout coming of $1 million, because right now it's $4 million. And by July 1st, the buyout for his contract's $1 million. So if something was going to happen, it probably won't be till July 1st. But it would be interesting, because a lot of their recruits will end up flipping. And I think you could do more damage by firing him than keeping him around.
Great. I love your intake, man. This is why we have you on the show, Jordan. A lot of people, you know, they don't get that Indiana, Chicago, perspective. So I'm glad to have an insider like you on the show. What's up, listeners? Just like to take the time to thank you for listening to The Fast Break. But before we move on to the rest of the show, I just have to ask, do you like daily fantasy? If so, check out the app Draft. Yes, Draft. Get this, your chances of winning on Draft are almost 3 times as better than FanDuel or DraftKings. Yes, 3 times as better. The data shows almost 90% of the players lose on DraftKings, and on FanDuel, over 40% of the money goes to just 1% of the players. If you're not a pro and not spending hours a day on fantasy, you should be playing on Draft. You'll win more often. The facts just show. And to give you even more intrigue to get on the app, use the promo code ABPN. Yes, ABPN. And you'll get 100% bonus on your first deposit up to $600. Use the promo code ABPN, 100% bonus on your first deposit. Promo code ABPN. Look, draft is simple. No salary cap, no wages. Simple, old school snake draft. When it's your turn to pick, it's your turn to play. Draft. Smarter play for daily fantasy. Now back to the show. Let's move on, you know, to the music side of things. I know we touched on it earlier. You have, you know, the debut of Migos' album Culture, which has hits of its own. Let's talk about Culture for a little bit. I'll be honest with you. I love T-Shirt. That's my favorite song off the album. Bad and Bougie is in a class of its own. But as I listen to the album, the more and more, I mean, you know, it's bangers, but I didn't think the album lived up to the hype. How do you feel about that?
Really? I think I'm on the opposite side of that, and where I think this album top to bottom is one of my favorites, and I think I don't know what it is about them, but before they released this album, I liked a lot of their, you know, their hits that they had, Versace and whatever you want to say is like their one-liner that they had that came out, a song that came out. But top to bottom, like, I keep finding songs on this album that I'll go back and listen to. I think the only song that really just didn't get me was the song with 2 Chainz. I was actually kind of disappointed with that song, Deads with 2 Chainz in it. I didn't really like that song. The Kelly Price, I could see where you're coming from. Kelly Price is good, but it's a very typical Travis Scott song for me, and it's nothing adventurous or something that I thought maybe they would do like they did with Big Sean. Big Sean Sacrifices, those two. So I don't know. To me, I like the album. I thought it was really good. And also, shout out to their last song on their album. Them slowing it down and doing a slow song together. They should do more songs like that, because that song is awesome. I love that. I love Out Your Way. And so does Chad Johnson, by the way. Yes, sir. Agreed. Yo, you know what? I tell people too. I know, like, there's a lot of people that were like me where Migos wasn't their favorite, and it wasn't something they went to all the time, but I started going back and listening to their freestyles. These dudes can just start spitting lyrics out of nowhere, like,
yeah,
for a long time. I watched, I think, a 20-minute freestyle they did on the radio. I can't remember which one they did it on, but it was nonstop. It was through beats of all different kind from all different artists, and it's like 20 minutes long on YouTube. I just watched it a couple weeks ago. It's crazy. They literally don't stop. They hit on every beat, every change of beat that they had, they hit on point. So as far as freestyles and like you said, their lyrics, there's a lot more behind it than I guess the replay value, if anything, the replay value for this album after probably April is probably going to be very low, besides like Bad and Bougie and like T-Shirt and, maybe even their other single, What the Price. Other than that, I think some of these other ones can be kind of forgivable and forgettable. But you're totally right. You're totally spot on. And say I had the same agreement with you on the Travis Scott song. I thought it was, first of all, way too long, 6 minutes and 4 seconds for a tempo. And then Travis Scott really doesn't even come in and do a verse until like the last 2 minutes of the song. And I think like when you have a feature, they should be in the first 2.5 minutes of your song. But I don't know. That's just me. I'm not a music producer, but that's just me as far as taste-wise goes.
Let's move on to, you know, Big Sean, I Decided. A lot of anticipation coming with this album. I mean, this guy promoted, I believe he promoted this album the most out of any album he had so far. And he said he was going for different direction with this. It was going to be more deep. He took the J. Cole route, per se, with J. Cole's last album. Just a deep inner perspective with himself and with reality. And I think the album, it started off hot. I love the intro. I love the light. Bounce Back, No Favors. I love the Eminem verse. Eminem just, oh my gosh, that feature was just great.
Can we talk about that verse for a minute? Like, the first time I heard that, I, like, literally rewound back, like, 5 or 6 times, like, the first, like, 10 yes. seconds of it, because I'm like, did he really just say that? And he just goes in, and for him to put Eminem on his album, for Big Sean to put Eminem on his album, especially in this, that type of verse, too, I don't know what your thoughts on it were, but I think it's hands down probably the best song on the album.
Oh, yes. I think that's the go-to song I listen to, that and Sunday Morning Jetpack. Eminem's verse, you know, I felt like I was back in 2001, 2002 again, just that old raunchy F.U. Eminem. And, you know, people were pissed about the lyrics. And, you know, I can see why you'd be pissed about the lyrics, but still, it's like, it's Eminem. You know what you're getting from Eminem. And in the day, it's rap. No Favors, by far one of the best tracks off the album. But, man, and I said I can preach like the J. Cole type effect was his last album, where I just started to get, it got boring to me, man. The replay value for this album was just low. I respect it by all means. I get where he was coming from. Maybe I'm just in the position of music where, like, you know, it's kind of weird because with Migos, I thought it was too much, you know, not enough, like, concept for me to grab in. And for Big Sean, I thought it was too much. So I need, like, a happy medium. I like the lyrics. He went on Sacrifices. But I love Halfway Off the Balcony. But overall, just the replay value just wasn't there for me.
Yeah, I think you're right. You're spot on. I'm with you on that. I come back to this album and I listen to the few songs that I picked out that I would like that have high replay for me. And that's being like Bounce Back. I'm already done with. I'm already tired of that song. And that's like been his most popular one out of all of them. I feel like I come back for No Favors. Jump Out the Window. Actually, I love the beat in that song. The way that beat starts off. The only thing I could say about that song is I wish he went a little bit harder in that song. He took kind of a soft route towards the middle of the song. That song, Sacrifices with Migos, and then the last song on the album, Bigger Than Me, which it seems like a lot of artists in hip-hop now are leaving their last song to be like a really slow like outro to their songs. But Big Sean, Migos, and Future, which we'll probably talk about in the next little bit here, Future's second album, they all end with like really slow, somber, like melodies and have fantastic lyrics. So shout out to everybody who did that, because now I'm going to go to every last song on every album that comes out from the future to look for that, because I've seen kind of a pattern with all these albums. But like you said, I have like 4 or 5 songs off this album that I come back to. Other than that, it's passable.
Yeah, and let's talk about Future, the back-to-back albums. It took a while for me to get this, but like, you know, the first album was titled Future, and then the second album was titled Hendrix. Put together Future Hendrix, which he's known by. You know, Future is just hot, man. I mean, you seen the Mask Off tweets. Like, people are having a field day with that beat. And then Hendrix with the, you know, collab with Rihanna. People are loving that as well. And it just shows you how diverse Future is. I never thought Future would be, you know, this diverse and culturally impacted. I mean, I'll go as far as to say that Future has went another level past T-Pain. I know they had beef, but I think Future has passed that level. And, you know, Drake has much to think of that when they did the, you know, collab mixtape and going on tour together. The Future thing that I wanted to point out, I believe he lost a lawsuit with his former manager, Rocco. And Future has to give, I believe, both of his album compensations to Rocco for the next 2 albums. So I heard that Future's got these 2 albums out the way and just paid off Rocco and just said the hell of it. But Future did an interview on Twitter saying, no, I'm not doing it for Rocco, I'm doing it for me, which is a politically correct thing to say, but he...
That's definitely not how he said it, but yeah, I applaud you for getting it podcast.
I don't want to go back and edit what Future actually said. You can look it up on Twitter yourself. But he definitely does get out the way, and he still put out great content as well. So what's your thoughts on the Future albums?
Okay, so I said this to a couple of my buddies, people who like Future too. I said his first album was very, very typical, atypical Future, very hardcore, very look at me, you know, this is what I usually produce, and this is the type of music that he's been very successful with, which is fine. And immediately when I listened to it for the first couple times through, I figured, okay, there's a couple songs on here that have decent replay value. Like we talked, though, that album, to me, I don't know, it doesn't have a whole lot of retention as far as, like, songs that I'll probably be listening to in November, and that's very far and few between when songs stick with me that long. But I think his second album, Hendrix, has a lot of opportunity, a lot of potential for that. Towards the end of his album, one of the songs on the album is Incredible, which I think is phenomenal. The last song on the album, too, which I talked about with all three of these, I believe it's called Sorry. That's a phenomenal song, and it just... Future does a lot of different things, and he reaches, and he tries to expand his sound, and I think he does it perfectly in this. And I read a Ringer article. I don't know if you read the Ringer or listen to any of their podcasts, but they have a pretty interesting perspective on hip-hop music and culture, and they compared Future's second album to a very Drake-like album, and saying, like, with the melodies and the way it was produced and kind of being out of your element was something that he did. But overall, I like the second album way better than the first. And the second album's way more slowed down and more creative, I think, in Future's element, which is a lot coming from him.
Yeah, it definitely has more content. I think, like, the first album, like you said, it was Future, Look at Me, you know, Look at Me, XS Temptation. But no, you get the first bump in Future album. Then the second was just in depth. I mean, can we talk about how good of collab Rihanna and Future are? I mean, they have I put that song way back. He's like, love and affection.
Super old.
So, like, they have that chemistry. I think Rihanna and Drake and Future and Rihanna, they make good music. I wouldn't be surprised if all three of them on a track sometime in the future. I didn't mean to do that. I know, right? Let's move on to your guy. Chance the Rapper, you being in that area, how much of an impact does Chance the Rapper have?
Man, I can't even believe it. It's blown up so much, and it makes me so happy because he's a guy that came up through hip hop and rap music, and the people that attest that to, you know, negative things, and I mean, yeah, you can do that, and there's evidence for it. Maybe even the way Chance came up through his album. I mean, Acid Rap was made. He made that whole album while he was tripping on acid. And people have looked way beyond those kind of surface and stupid issues that I feel like would catch a lot of artists because Chance does so many good things. I don't know if you know about this, but he does open mic night every Thursdays for a local high school in the city of Chicago, where he's there all the time and people just, you know, it's basically an open mic. You talk about issues, and he does performances too, and he brings in artists. I know Kanye West showed up for one time. 2 Chainz has shown up. Artists all over the place. Lupe Fiasco was there with him one time. So he does a lot for the community, and he always does something special for Chicago and always, like, makes sure to never forget and to take care of where he came from, and I think that's huge. And for him to be only 23 years old is even a bigger inspiration for, I think, a lot of us and a lot of millennials in this time where people are all connecting. And I think that's the most important thing out of it all is Chance is an opportunity for people all over of any different age to kind of connect. And his music does that, and the things that he does outside of his music and for people on a daily basis. And his overall genuine happiness, I think, lives throughout Chicago. And you can't go around this city. You can't go anywhere really in the Chicagoland area without bringing up Chance's name and people not knowing who that is. Like, they talk to my parents. My parents even know who Chance the Rapper is, and they ask me about him. And so it's pretty cool to see, and it's exciting. And following him since the mixtapes early on and seeing him live in front of, you know, a couple hundred people, and then going and seeing him at Lollapalooza in front of thousands and thousands of people, and him coming on stage with R. Kelly. Like, it's built up all the way to that. And I don't know. Have you ever seen Chance live?
No, I have not seen Chance live.
Man, you got to get to a Chance show, because it changes everything. Like, he's hearing and seeing him live and some of those old songs that he plays, and then mixing it in with the new. It's fantastic. I've seen him three times. Once when he was promoting Acid Rap, another time at Lollapalooza when he was with the Social Experiment band, and then I saw him at IU when he was in between, not dropping Coloring Book just yet, but kind of in between with Social Experiment 2 as well. But all three performances were completely unique to each other, and they were awesome. The visuals, too. His visuals are insane.
You know, I seen Chance the Rapper, like, concerts on Snapchat stories, which is nowhere near the full experience. You know what? I didn't know Chance was going to be this big. To be honest with you, I like you how you brought up 10 days, because I'm a big people, you know, I'm a big, like, y'all, you bandwagon. Like, I'm sorry, I'm going to call you out if you're a bandwagon. So, which is great for the artist, but in itself is as a consumer. But, but you know, 10 days is dope. I mean, from tracks like Juke, Brain Cells, and a lyric that stood out to me, it was on Acid Rap. What he said, you know, if you talk about my brother Vic, then, you know, I gotta get involved too. And I'm sorry, but I think, you know, forever that Vic Mensa and Chance the Rapper will always be tied together. And
always, 100%. I'm so glad.
They will, and it sucks because I feel like, you know, Chance didn't take the easy route. I think Vic saw Kanye. Oh my gosh! Okay, I'm gateway out. That's Kanye. I'm signing with Death Jam, and he took the more. Just from the outside looking in, he took like the more standoffish, easy route. And Chance the Rapper did it his own way. He stuck to it. And after the album with the Social Experiment, when he put the guy, was it Donnie Trumpet? He put him on.
Yeah.
And, you know, I liked some of the songs on there, but I wasn't a huge, you know, fan of it overall. And we can go back to the Justin Bieber feature on Confident.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, damn, like, Chance killed it, and that's all he gets? Like, Justin, don't big time Chance like that. Let him get some more bars in. But I think Chance has came a long way, and you can't hate on him because he actually did an album, well, mixtape, that, you know, it was him, and no BS, he's not looking out for anybody. Like, this is himself, and I gotta, you know, much respect to him. Should he have won the album of the year for Best Grammy? I mean, I don't know about that one. But, you know,
you knew that was coming. As soon as the independent artists were allowed to win Grammys, you knew he was winning the first one.
Well, I was talking to my boy Tino in the last podcast, and it was just like, well, they did it with Macklemore. They're pushing that. But Chance the Rapper has so much, you know, more support behind him. And how can you not root for Chance the Rapper, you know? So shout out to him. And one more thing I want to say about Chance is that, let's take it way back to when Drake made Draft Day. And he's like, if I would have, you know, had a rap name, I would pick a name like Chance the Rapper. And it shows you how far Chance has came since that verse. Am I wrong for, like, putting that out there?
No, that's right. Like, yeah, you said, like, I don't know him, but, you know, I know of him in that song. That's interesting you brought that up. And you said, you talk about 10 Day, too. People forget about that. Like, if you really know the background of Chance, and like I had touched on before, you hear about, like, he made that mixtape while he was suspended 10 days from school. Like, sometimes people don't make that connection. Acid Rap, like I said, he was tripping on acid throughout the whole entire production of that album. And now he's to the point where he is, where he's Grammy winner. Everybody wants a piece of him. And, he's the most inspiring person, I think, in the world of entertainment right now, and even outside of that. So you can definitely look at those pieces. And his brother, too. Even his brother, Taylor Bennett, has started to blow up. He just dropped his, like, first official album, and he came out talking about how his sexual orientation, and that got a lot of news. And being, like, in the shadow of Chance, too, I think has brought him to spotlight, too. But don't get it twisted. That guy can spit bars, too. I actually, funny story about Taylor Bennett real quick. I don't know if I've told you this story or not before. I don't think I have.
What,
but
is it the one where he's like, he came up as like as a huge douche and left the party early? Was that
yeah,
it?
Yes. I believe. But it seems like he's changed his character around since the last time I met him, and it looks like he's gone through a lot since then, and seems like he's kind of changed the way he acts, and maybe that's an attest to his brother and the success his brother's had because of the positivity he's reflected on other people.
Let's touch on Drake. More Life was supposed to drop next week, but I don't know if you've seen the tweet. Drake has delayed it, supposedly because Ed Sheeran album was coming out on March 4th as well. So Drake didn't want to, you know, battle with Ed Sheeran and steal his spotlight. I don't know how that went. Your thoughts on that? Because me personally, I'm disappointed because we were raised in a generation where like, okay, you're dropping your album that day. Well, you know what? I'm dropping my album the same day as well. I mean, look from when Kanye and 50 Cent dropped both their albums at the same time to J. Cole dropping the same album, Born Sinner, on the same day as Yeezus. And, you know, Jay-Z's Magic Carter, you know, Holy Grail, they all dropped on the same day. So for Drake to not drop More Life because of Ed Sheeran? And more
yeah, what's going on with that? I didn't hear that or I didn't see that, so that's interesting. Like, really? Like, are they competing for the same type of, like, same type of audience? I mean, I could see a little bit of overlap, maybe, like, with college and younger demographic, but, like, really overall, I don't think that's... that has like a huge effect on either one of them. I don't know. Maybe he's just giving credit to like to respected artists, or maybe he's just selfish and wants all the attention for himself and doesn't want other outlets taking a minute to talk about, you know, Ed Sheeran's album, and they all he wants to do is talk about Drake for the next whatever it'll be, like a month of just straight Drake content. So that's interesting. But I know I've read a couple places that he's pushed this album back like 200 different times. So I don't know. I read another place that he was going to release the whole track list on Uvu Radio on iTunes this weekend, and it'll play there until like for a week, I guess. And then kind of like what he did with Views, where he had like a listening party and then he like let it play on roll for like, I don't know, maybe it was 48 hours before he actually released the full album. So maybe he'll do something like that, but I don't know. I'm curious to see where this album goes. Where do you think he's going to go as far as style-wise?
Well, I agree with you there with the whole, I think he just wants attention to himself. I mean, Drake can have it, you know. He's not in, let's be honest, he's in no rush to release this album, because if he was, he would have released it already. I sound like with Wabbit season. he would have definitely released this album already. I think where he's going, because I listened to the interview, and Oliver, his longtime friend, he's gonna be executive producing this album. And the last time Oliver produced something was So Far Gone. Ooh. And we've seen where that took Drake's career. So maybe we'll get something like So Far Gone again. I think that's where he's going to go. Because of Views, he did it all. He did Caribbean, he did pop, he did rap, he did R&B. Like, he did everything you want from Views. And the thing about Views, Views dropped in April last year, and we're still talking about Views. So longevity with Drake has never been a problem. Look for him maybe dropping in April again. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, that's interesting. I remember sitting around listening to his... I remember, like, the Views being so hyped up, and I was actually sitting there listening to the radio edition of it where they were playing every song, every track before he released it. So that's weird. Yeah, you're totally right, totally spot on about... how he doesn't really need, you know, he doesn't really need the attention right now. And that if he really was desperate to drop new music, he would do it. And I feel like maybe there's something he needs to perfect on the album still. Maybe there's something that we don't know behind the scenes where he's finishing something up, or he didn't like something that was a part of it. So I don't know. I'm always interested to see like why artists keep pushing music back and how many different changes that they can make before they actually release the album. I had a question for you though. Do you think that the way artists are like churning out content, like writers and like people across social media are now today, you think that's kind of the way music's going to start going, where, you know, artists are going to have a bank full of tracks that they'll keep, and, you know, that they, if they feel like they need to drop an album, they'll do something to resurrect a career or, you know, sustain their name in the media. Like, I feel like this whole future thing that we talked about earlier, I think we even talked off mic that I feel like it was just he went to a bank of songs that he had ready and he mashed up two albums so that he didn't have to pay those royalties. And like we still said, there's still hits, there's still bangers, and there's still great creativity in those. But do you think that's the way music's kind of going now, where they're just going to drop songs like constantly, like a lot of, like some of these guys are doing, where it seems like every week somebody's got a new song, same artist staying relevant?
You know what, to answer your question, I think it's always been like that, and I think the way social media is set up now is now we're just learning about it. I mean, look at If You're Reading This It's Too Late. Drake said those are a whole bunch of throwaway tracks that he just essentially put on an album and made money off of it. So I think it's always been there. I mean, look at Tupac. He had like 100, you know, unreleased songs that, you know, gradually came out. Same with Biggie. So I think artists always make tracks. And then they store it away for a while. There's probably 100 Drake and Future songs that we don't even know about. So, I think they do it for the namesake is that, all right, let's be honest. If I'm an artist, I want to stay relevant, but think about touring too. So I'm not going to have the time to be on tour and make music as well. So let me make as many tracks as possible while I'm not doing tours. And then while I'm on the tour, I'll gradually release the tracks and play them on my tour and make them a bigger hit. I think that's the science behind all that.
I think that makes sense. You're right. The artists probably have kept this, but with social media, it just drives it even more now. With the access and the like, literally within seconds, you could just think anybody could drop a song and it'd be an instant hit overnight. And there's probably more logistics without social media and the internet, you know, even 10, 15 years ago. One thing I want to run past you real fast, though, I don't know if you saw this on social media or not, but I saw a video with Chance in the studio with Future, and they were doing a song together, and it was like probably about a minute and a half of like a complete track, but him and Future, and it was bomb from what I heard. It was Chance in the studio, and this was maybe 3, 4, 5 days ago. So maybe a possible release of maybe one song, maybe more from them.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. Let's take back the Coloring Book. Smoke Break was phenomenal. One of my favorite tracks off the album was featured, you know, Chance the Rapper and Future. I think the song you're talking about is called My Peak that they were sneak previewing. Dude, that sounded amazing. Just looking at how hype Chance was, I cannot wait for that to drop. I hate when Chance does a lot of teasing with his music. Like, he teases a lot of snippets, but like, you never get the full release of it. So I'm hoping with this one, we're definitely gonna get it soon. Yeah, I can't wait for that to come out. That looked phenomenal.
So does this mean Future's dropping a third album?
You know, it was a rumor that Future's gonna drop another album this week. I don't see that happening. I think that's too much as an artist and way too much as a consumer too. But Future did this last year too. I think he had the Drake mixtape, then he had Dirty Sprite around that time. Then he had Evolve as well. So, you know, Future's known for putting out constant music, and that's one of the reasons that made him popular. You know what? I'm glad you brought up Future one more time, because did you, and, you know, I'm not going to say that. I don't respect Hobson. But, like, his ill mind when he was, like, dissing on Future, did you hear that?
No, I didn't.
I'm going to send a YouTube link after we're done recording. He was basically like, oh, I can make auto-tune and do this with my voice too. I'm like, okay. And it sounded great. Don't get me wrong. Hobson had a point. He could do that. But, you know, Hobson's a little bit too hipster for me. But I'm not talking about Hobson anymore. I'm over it. who are your top five artists in the game right now to wrap things up?
Oh, man. I guess I prepared myself more for, like, what I've been listening to more recently. I would, like, it's no doubt, like, if we were talking about the most popular things I was been listening to lately, the normal names come up, you know, like Future and Big Sean and Migos because of their albums that they've dropped. But an album that I think has been gone under the radar is Lupe Fiasco's. And, like, I hear all the time from a lot of people, like, oh, you like Lupe Fiasco? That dude's trash. Like, oh, like, he's got some, like, more powerful lyrics and he's trying to do, like, way too much with his music. Like, I hear that all the time from people. And, like, go, like, if you haven't listened to Lupe Fiasco's new album, I suggest the song Jump. That's, I swear to you, in like the next 2 or 3 weeks, that'll be a song that people are going to be playing everywhere. And, it just needed some recognition. And I know Spotify just recognized it like within the last week. And his album's been out for almost a month now. They just put Jump on their Rap Caviar. So that's going to be a song that's going to be popular. So I would say Lupe Fiasco. I'm late to the party on Lil Boat, late to the party on Lil Yachty. But I've been listening to him nonstop, and the dude can spit bars, and he's got such a different tone and to like rap music that we're not used to. And people call it very like millennial rap, that it's like this feel good, positive, like upbeat, like cartoonish type of producing. I didn't like it at first, but it's grown on me, and I've listened to some of his other songs, and he's got me hooked now.
Yeah, I'm glad, because I remember like when we recorded way back, We were dissing on the Yachty's and the Uzis, and it's like I'm
still on all on board to trash Lil Uzi every day of the week. That's and fair. Same with Kodak Black.
That's you don't like Tunnel Vision?
What's that?
You don't like the song Tunnel Vision?
Then it's all right.
When I see you in, you know what? I'm glad you talk about Lil Yachty, because I mean I got to see him live, and yo, I was feeling him, man. Like he was cool. I think the turning point for Lil Yachty was when he was on a commercial with LeBron James.
Oh, in the Sprite commercial?
Yeah, with the whole Minnesota. That's when I took him seriously. I'm like, okay, he made it. Like, I can't hate on him. He made it. Like, you did a Sprite. First of all, you did a Sprite commercial. You're getting royalties off of that. And then none other you paired it with LeBron James. Just from the whole brand, I think Lil Yachty has branded himself so much better. As far as my top five artists right now, I'm just like general consensus. Future, obviously. Migos, specifically Quavo. Chance the Rapper. Gucci Mane, who has been just on features and solo tracks as his own. And then I still have to put, I know he hasn't put out music in a while, I still have to put Drake. Drake will always be hot. People are constantly waiting for Drake, especially with his features on both. People are going to be eating that up for a while until, you know, more life drops. Those are my top five hottest out right now.
Yeah, I said, what did I say? I said Lupe Fiasco, Lil Yachty, Future, Migos, definitely. And I'm in the process, I'm trying to look up this. There's a song that I wanted to tell you about too, and now I just completely lost it. But I think, oh, Slide by Calvin Harris with Migos and Frank Ocean.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
another song that I've been mm-hmm. listening to. So to like tie everything up with that last song, Frank Ocean coming out with some more new music, which people probably thought he wasn't going to release another album for like another 6 years or whatever, however long it was. But I really liked that song, and there was a lot of people I saw that said like they had no idea who Calvin Harris was, and I'm like, all right, dude, like if you're any type of a music connoisseur and you don't know who Calvin Harris is, then I don't know. I don't know what type of music they're listening to, but yeah. So that's been a lot of what I've been listening to lately. I jump around like you do. I jump around from different things. And an album that I keep finding myself going back to a ton is Schoolboy Q's album, Blank Face LP. That's like for him to be up for a Grammy for that, I think was just phenomenal alone for him. Obviously, we knew Chance was going to win it, but like when I saw him up there for that award, I'm like, people don't recognize that this album is phenomenal, like top to bottom, like produced, features, lyrically, it was great. And I saw him live too when he promoted this album, so, and that was back in like November, I think, when we talked last. But phenomenal, like Schoolboy Q is like the next one that I think is going to blow up and become like next level big.
I'm glad you brought up Lupe Fiasco and Schoolboy Q, because Lupe Fiasco, to me, obviously not on the higher scale as Chance, but he was kind of that first Chance the Rapper for Chicago. His music was real positive from kick push to Beeman. Like, he had a lot of motivational and dots and lines. Like, he has a lot of positive music with his, and he has flow as well. He's been one of the more realer rappers. I think he doesn't get the credit that he deserves. As far as Schoolboy Q, this is his second time, and I'll be honest, I don't take as much stock in the Grammys, you know, the politics behind it, but nonetheless, this was Schoolboy Q's second time being nominated for Best Rap Album. The first, what was his first, name was his first major debut album?
The one with, like, Man of the Year on it, and...
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Is it called Oxycontin?
Yes, you're right, Oxycontin, yep. So he had... two albums that were nominated for best, you know, rap album of the year for the Grammys.
And they were back to back albums too, like 2014, 2016, back to back albums. And shout out to his album artwork too. I don't think people give enough appreciation to album artwork, but that he had a cool concept with that, and I'm glad you liked it too, because like that's still one that I have high replay value in. That came out in what was it, September or October?
Yeah, but around that time. It was definitely in that September ending of summer range. So that's definitely when that came out. Yeah, Schoolboy Q. I know a lot of people talk about Kendrick, and rightfully so. But geez, Schoolboy Q is no doubt the second best artist on Top Dog Entertainment.
And I love that he does his own thing too now. Like, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think Kendrick is on Blank Face. Am I right? Yeah, he's not on Blank Face, which is good for him, because I think getting out of that shell of like being a guy that's under Kendrick's wing is something that I think was holding Schoolboy Q back, and same with Absol. And now that like they're all kind of like branched out like a tree, but all connected at the same time, if that makes any sense, kind of all doing their own thing in one way or another, and they're all popular in one way or the other, like on their own. And it's great when they come back together and do collaborations together, but good for Schoolboy Q, like, finally kind of getting out of that like shadow. And like you said, Oxycontin was up for Grammy too, and maybe we could even say that, but Kendrick featured on Oxycontin, so this is the first thing that I think, as far as releasing for Schoolboy Q, is like this is my own, like this is who I am, I brought in my own guys, and like kind of spread away from TDE, like as far as like featuring those guys. Shout out to Vince Staples though on that album. Vince Staples is the man. He's gonna be another guy that blows up.
Yeah, and I always love Vince Staples' interesting take on the LA Clippers and how much he hates on Chris Paul. Jordan, man, as always, it's great. I don't talk to you often, but when I do, it's always a great time. Mixing that hoop and hip-hop culture together, I think it's great, man.
Hey, man, I appreciate you having me on your podcast, seriously. Like I said, if you want to listen to me ramble on about the Bulls, you can listen to me over at the Debatables podcast on Almighty Baller and ABPN podcasts. We're part of the A-Team. We're your Chicago Bulls, your source for Chicago Bulls podcasts. So check us out there. You can follow me on Twitter. Like I said, Jordan C. Malley. I talk with Blake all the time. We're always connecting on Twitter, talking about latest things in hip-hop. You'll find funny things on my Twitter, and so yeah, if you want to give an interesting follow, if you like memes, head over to Jordan C. Malley, follow me on Twitter. Other than that, thank you so much for letting me like come on and like spill all of my music taste to you in like the last 3 months, because every time something new, I hear something new, you're the first person I go to. I'm like, dude, did you hear this? Like, this is awesome. Like, what are your thoughts on this album? So I'm glad we got to do this again, and we'll have to do this again soon. And like we talked about, I want to like maybe see if there's other guys on our network that are that might be down to like do like a roundtable of like albums and like fight for each other and see what kind of other opinions are out there. But glad to connect again, and shout out to you. This podcast is awesome, so definitely give it a listen.
Thanks, Jordan, man. Like I said, one of the coolest dudes on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Always wanted to DM and collab about music, sports, and everything like that. So make sure you get on that Debatables. You can find Debatables and my show, The Fast Break, on almightyballer.com. Check us out on iTunes at the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. And we're on blogtalkradio.com as well. As always, Jordan Malley, thank you for joining the show. And you know what we do? We have to stay lit.